Dear ladies and gentlemen, good morning from Israel. It's a great honor to be here with you today and moderate a distinguished panel who have had hands-on insights on the current state and the future plans of the Cyprus banking sector. I would like to introduce to you our panelists, John Patrick Hourigan, CEO of Bank of Cyprus, Nicolas Hadjiyannis, CEO of Cooperative Bank, Emilios Kyriakou, Managing Director at Citibank and Country Officer for Greece and Cyprus, and Mr. Yannis Matsis, CEO of Hellenic Bank. After a tough period of economic turmoil, like our Minister of Finance mentioned earlier, the country economy is now well into the path of growth. The same is expected by the financial services sector being one of the main contributors and drivers to the Cyprus economy. The goals achieved by the Cyprus banking sector over the last 3 years have been mentioned as impressive by analysts at an international level. The Cyprus banking system has undergone considerable transformation since the start of the crisis in 2013. Much has been done to restore customers' trust and investor confidence in the banking sector. Deposits in the banking sector are increasing continuously. Banks are gradually returning back to profitability, and Bank of Cyprus successfully repaid the ELA burden of 11 billion this January. Only a few believed in this fast transformation. The sector has taken full advantage of the overhaul in the system, and along with increased ECB supervision, managed to correct fundamental weaknesses. The latest aggregate statistics of the Cyprus banking sector reinforce the point above. With a loan-to-deposit ratio at 80%, deposit reaching 58 billion, and the capital adequacy ratio stands at a healthy 17%. The biggest challenge in the Cypriot banking sector today is the high volume of non-performing loans. The non-performing loan stock stands at 47% in the banking system, and it has been declining at a slow pace. I would like to begin our discussion with our distinguished panelists, starting with Mr. Matsis. Mr. Matsis, your bank was the first to proceed to establish a special company for servicing and managing NPLs. How did you arrive to this solution, and are you working on any other solutions at the same time?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Stelio. Yes, the level of NPLs, the headline number is 57%. Now that's bad. It's very bad. However, there is also positive news. As Mr. Yuriadis said earlier, Cyprus is a stable country with a stable democracy and a stable judicial system, which means that the economy will always be cyclical. And we are turning the cycle now. So the headline number is bad, but the good news is the pace of decline has, the road has finished. Now we are turning the cycle, and all banks expect to see a reduction in the level of non-performing loans over the coming period. So now the challenge is what? We expect to see a reduction. The challenge is what? It's the pace that we will manage to reduce our NPLs and the returns that we will generate out of it. Clearly, we want to maximize the returns and to make as quick as possible the resolution of our non-performing loans. Over the last year, we have started restructuring our teams, our arrears management division, in order to be able to quickly resolve the non-performing loans. But what we realized whilst in the process of doing this is that as bankers, it's actually not our DNA. What we like to do is to give loans. And what the borrowers like to do is to take the loans from us. And we work together in a win-win scenario where we give, they take, and if they do well, which they want and we want, we will get paid our loans back. Problem here is for a change, there's a conflict. We want to take, and the borrower doesn't want to give because they are facing financial dire straits. Their livelihoods are at stake. So the bankers, we are not cut from this cloth. We cannot. That's not what we signed up for. That's not what we are trying to do on a day-to-day basis. And therefore, this creates friction, and it creates a big problem in us managing to seamlessly resolve our non-performing loans. So what we decided to do at Hellenic is to call the experts, both international experience, but also the debt collectors, the people that they're not bankers. They sign up for a different type of business. That's what they like to do. That's what they know to do. So we decided to take it away from us, to outsource it into a debt collector firm, an international with international experience to help us resolve our non-performing loans and therefore increase the speed and also maximize the return. So we were creating a special purpose, an outsource vehicle, a service company that will be servicing the loans that will retain on the bank's balance sheet. We believe that this will also help attract investors. Investors like, there is special investment funds that like to invest in non-performing loans, but in order for them to do so, they need someone to service those loans, to recover them for them, because what they do is they invest, they don't also recover. And we believe that by having this outsource servicing company, we can actually help attract foreign investment in the non-performing loan in the industry. Thank you.
Mr. Hourigan, do you believe that foreign investors have a role to play in helping to move out NPLs out of the bank's balance sheets?
Look, I think, but it wouldn't surprise those of you in the audience that know me that I don't agree with Mr. Matsius. I think banking is about managing, maintaining, and securing the money that you have out, effectively rented to your customers. And if we don't have the DNA to manage the money when we have to recover it, then we're not a bank. So we have 450 people inside our own bank who have managed to reduce non-performing loans by $3 billion during the course of last year, which was 84% of the reduction in Cyprus last year. And in fact, our peak to trough from, you know, in terms of moving GDP off our bank was 22% of GDP in NPL reduction, and the next best in Europe is UniCredit with 1.7%. So I think there is DNA in Cyprus that can do it. I think there are ways to approach it. So we have 450 people inside our bank that are our in-house servicer, and I think it's good to see other approaches being taken. So the externalization of a servicer to get power into it is one approach. But, you know, the investors look at track record. They look at ability to use the law. If you take a recent ECB sort of chart which says here are the periphery of Europe, here's the law, here's the ability to get a collateral, here's the ability to enforce, Cyprus, through the reforms put in place by the government, has in fact created a top of league table with Ireland ability to use the law. Now, it won't surprise you that if you're running your bank properly, you don't necessarily use the law, you use the threat of the law to create the momentum. And that's what we've been doing in Cyprus. So I'm always pleased to see different approaches to the same problem. But I think to date, Cyprus is making reasonable progress from very, very high structural defaults. But actually, I think that we are well on our way. And in fact, $5 billion over the next 3 years from Ernesto earlier on would be a real disappointment. I think we need to do that number, you know, annually. So we've got some big, big numbers to move in a very short space of time. And I think this panel's job is to make sure it happens, so we're all approaching it differently.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Hourigan, do you believe that foreign financial investors have a role?
I'll just hand it to next. Look, yes, foreign direct investment is an important part of it, but NPLs are basically about either getting people to repay their loans in a structured way or taking possession of their collateral and selling it. If we take possession of their collateral, we don't want to own it. We want someone else to own it. So, yes, we must attract foreign direct investment for that. But we also must try and actually rehabilitate the economy. Cyprus was a 20% NPL economy before the crisis. And it was that way because the law was 15 years to get your collateral. And basically it was, if you didn't repay your loan, you ended up in a dance with the courts. That's now an 18-month process. We have replaced the marshmallow hammer with an anvil, or with a steel hammer, and we can wield it. And I think that's the difference now in Cyprus today after the reforms of the government since the crisis. So, yeah, foreign direct investment. We brought €1 billion into our own bank, and some of my colleagues here have done the same. We brought the largest ever foreign direct investment into Cyprus since the foundation of the state in 1960. And just, I won't steal the sort of speechifying here, but to orientate the audience, €1 billion in Cyprus is 6% of GDP. So when we talk about moving €1 billion of NPLs, we moved 3 last year. You're moving 18% of GDP. €1 billion in Cyprus is the same as moving 80 billion in Italy. So these are big numbers, and actually I think Cyprus can be fairly happy that the reforms and indeed the legislative stability we have now is helping us actually attract foreign direct investment.
Thank you. Mr. Hadjiannis, what are your views on the same matter?
Looking back in 2014, that gives an idea of how much progress was made regarding the NPL management. After let's say, 3 years, we have built significant sophistication and expertise in managing NPLs. Further to that, the whole banking system has improved its provisions levels by something like 8 billion of new provisions in the books of the banks, and we have a relatively high capital ratio. This gives us the opportunity to really set up strategies that are suitable for each bank, for the book of each bank. We do believe that significant progress has been made. You can see this in terms of restructuring is done, and also in terms of reduction in the absolute amount of NPLs. Regarding our bank, last year we reduced the 90 days loans with delays in more than 90 days by 800 million. That included 12,000 restructurings. All the banks have adopted the route of restructurings. This is very significant. This is a small economy with a relatively big banking sector. We need to stay close to the clients that they are willing and able to cooperate in order to allow these clients to re-enter back into the credit market. These are the clients that we will have to work with going forward. So it's very important for us. As far as the solutions adopted, there isn't a single solution. There isn't a single tool. This is a dynamic process. This is more or less uncharted territory where on a daily basis you need to improvise. And Cyprus, because it has a relatively well-developed legal and accounting system, it has British standards, it is a good testing ground for new strategies. So we are really pleased with the progress, and we do believe that the NPLs, they do not only present a problem, they don't only present a challenge, but it is an opportunity. It is an opportunity for us to do more business, and also it is an opportunity for international investors to really get some interesting returns.
Yes, yes, Mr. Worker.
I just want to add that, you know, when investors, I mean, you guys can put your money anywhere in the world, but when you look at banks, there is a real herd mentality in looking at NPL ratios, ignoring security versus non-secured lending, and then deploying Texas ratios and various other, what I would regard as relatively lazy techniques, but decent starting points for an initial analysis. You know, if you look at Cyprus, we've been able to move our non-performing loans rapidly because we don't have the hindrance of syndication at the large corporate end. We don't have a significant amount of unsecured, unrecoverable debt in the retail space. And if you compare Cyprus, which is about 95% secured lending because of the nature of cross-collateral and how lending was done, and you compare it to Italy, which is 50% unsecured. But yet we have this averaging where 50% coverage, cash coverage, is the answer to everything, and the Texas ratio tells you whether one bank is good or bad. This is just bad analysis and weak analysis, and actually I think it's awfully important. Someone mentioned deep value earlier on. You know, I would think the Cyprus banking sector has some deep value potential, and I think it really does warrant you guys having a good look at whether or not the law supports the attraction of it, whether the government is stable in terms of the reforms put in place, and then look at the nature of collateral. I mean, I look at our own bank, we're 118% covered between cash coverage and collateral values on discounted basis. And if you look at NPEs, which is the definition by the European Banking Authority, which, by the way, is the Hotel California of definitions, you know, you can enter it, but you can almost never leave. So you need to understand the difference. We have a $3 billion gap between the impaired 90 plus definition, which is things which are delinquent or showing impairment, versus NPEs, where we have $3 billion of fully performing, you know, loans inside the definition of non-performing loans. So the European banking sector needs to be carefully understood. The law needs to be understood. And the nature of the security underpinning the non-performing loans, I think, is an important value sort of distinction.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Kyriakou, being the only one on the panel who doesn't have to deal with the issue on a day-to-day basis, do you think that an asset management company to cover the whole sector could be a solution? And let's not forget that there are smaller banks that might not have the means to tackle the problem on their own.
Thank you, Stelios. By the way, Citigroup had to deal with $800 billion worth of non-performing loans, which we had to liquidate. So, I mean, nobody was absolved from this process after the financial crisis. I think that there is value to be made in the management of NPLs, and that's why there are different strategies. Everybody wants to monetize the value in this process. I think from the foreign investor point of view, the fundamentals are there. There is economic growth that will sponsor better performance. There is the legal framework is there. I would add that a working securitization law is required for foreign investors to be able to participate in the structuring and independent services. I mean, for foreign direct investors in this segment, they want to run their business plans and they want to have customized, tailored collection activity by independent services that will allow them to execute their plans and invest in the country's NPL stock. There is still discrepancy in the bid-ask, just because the perceptions of where the value is distinct, but I think as we see the economy improving, this discrepancy and the performance of the collections of my partners here is evidence and scrutinized, I think the bid-ask will shorten and probably we're going to see transactions taking place.
Thank you. I can see that you want to...
I do want to get in there again, sorry. Look, the bid-ask is blindingly obvious. If you don't bring value to a transaction, then someone looking for a mid-teens return or let's call it a 15% return on equity on an unlevered basis, buying something from someone who's looking for the same return on equity on a levered basis at 85% leverage, it's pretty obvious who the right owner of that asset is. So unless you're bringing major momentum or pace or skill to the party, then the better owner of an NPL, unfortunately, is a bank. So that's where we start. And then you turn to, the securitization law, I think we can navigate around the securitization law. I like legislative stability at the moment. We're looking at a number of things ourselves, and I think we'll have some things to announce in the relatively short order, where we'll be able to show additional ways to do things and additional progress by using what's there already. Because, you know, as we head into an election cycle and as we head into a whole lot of sort of new territories, I think we have to be realistic about what new reforms we can have put in place through our parliament. And I think there's enough there for us to be able to work with it. I think the bid ask is too wide for an investor only looking for a financial investment. But if you bring something real and different to the party, such as servicing, which Yanis is looking at, then perhaps you can bridge the bid-ask there. But we have to be pretty careful about, there hasn't been a trade in Europe on the periphery that hasn't been a sham. I mean, the Italian insurance trades don't work. The Greek trades with Pillarstone and KKR actually never happened. You know, there has been some in Portugal, and most of the rest involved massive state aid, where we basically moved the problem onto the state's balance sheet and burdened our kids. And actually, Cyprus hasn't done that. So it's nakedly available for all to see. And I think that actually will make really good progress on it in the next 1,000 days.
Thank you. Cypriot banks have managed to successfully recapitalize and achieve a notable level of stability. A challenge for the banks now is achieving growth in a market of already highly leveraged Cyprus companies and households. Mr. Hadjiannis, your bank is focused on the households and small businesses in Cyprus. Do you believe that this focus is enough to bring the desired growth?
Definitely no. Our bank used to be a traditional loans and savings bank in Cyprus. This is changing. We're transforming the bank. So the bank is becoming a modern, competitive retail bank. Therefore, it is quite natural for us to move upwards towards more SME lending, some corporate lending, and also increasing significantly our non-interest income. So in effect, we are more or less claiming our market share across all categories. We need to do this in a controlled pace because we're into a deep transformation process. We need to be careful. We need to do this in a well-planned way, but we are very optimistic because it is something that it is expected. It is expected that we do it. The clients are looking for it, and we do believe that there is value in the whole Cyprus economy. It's an economy that is improving, and we do see demand for new lending. And foreign direct investment as well is creating very, very interesting opportunities. So the prospects are there for the COP and for the banking industry as well.
Thank you. Mr. Matsis, where do you see growth coming from in the Cyprus banking sector in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, as the Minister of Finance said earlier, stability and opportunity. At this point, there appears to be a lot of, we are at the crossroads where there's a lot of opportunities and possibilities in the Cyprus economy for some quite significant big scale projects. To begin with, we see tourism recovering, and we expect the nature of tourism to change in, as Mr. Panayiotou mentioned earlier, not just sea and sun, but get more into winter tourism, sports tourism, etc. Of the growth expected next year in tourism, 80% is expected to be in winter. 80% of the growth is expected to be in winter tourism. So first area of growth would be tourism. Then we have a lot of big development projects, luxury resorts, marinas, golf courses, shopping malls, medical centers. All of them have been discussed earlier, and let me not get into the details of each, but clearly these large-scale projects are very important for the island. Cyprus is a $20 billion economy, right? Half a billion investment in the island is 0.5% of GDP. Is significant. So we see a lot of opportunity and possibilities for growth in all of these areas, including shipping, which is also a cyclical business, and the signs are that it's at somewhere in the bottom of the cycle. Now, some of these opportunities will create for us banks lending opportunities. Possibly some of them will be so big that maybe have to be syndicated amongst the various banks. But especially because a lot of these are coming from abroad, it will drip feed into the economy, into the retail sector as well, Nicola. And therefore, we would expect the SMEs as well to start growing together with the injection of capital into these large-scale projects. We also have the non-domicile rule, and we do see companies moving to Cyprus, moving staff to Cyprus to take advantage of the non-domicile rule and together with a lot of the other advantages that Cyprus has to offer. And that creates significant revenue for the country. It's like export suddenly appearing by having 30 or 40 employees in a company come and get paid in Cyprus, send their kids to schools, fill the supermarkets, and so on and so forth. So we see opportunity for growth everywhere. And there's a lot of possibilities, a lot of different possibilities which will create lending opportunities for us.
Thank you. Mr. Kourigan, what are the plans of Bank of Cyprus to channel its excess liquidity to?
Well, so I mean, the economy is 280% geared in the household sphere, so it is particularly overlevered. That deleveraging is occurring. Household income was hurt by, I think, 13% in the aftermath of the crisis in Cyprus, and there's been deflation in the consumption patterns inside households in Cyprus, which has helped them meet their financial obligations. We lent €1 billion into the Cyprus economy new last year. About half of that went to the retail SME space, and the other half went to the corporate space. And we expect to do somewhere of the order of double that next year. But we are still seeing a contracting of the loan stock that is supporting the economy, and that we think arrests into the first quarter of next year. So we're still seeing a natural contraction in the aftermath of a crisis in an over-levered economy as people sort of change the nature of their pattern of consumption. Now, that's okay. But what we then need to do is power up footfall and use of resources on an island that needs to find a new broad base for its own growth. And we are starting to see that. We've seen a significant investment in the tourist sector. We've seen a significant investment in the energy sector and the beginnings of the resources being put down for the growth of the economy. We're seeing business services and substance getting created in properties that might have previously been used for other things. We're seeing, we're seeing shipping actually begin to take root as a real sort of cluster, not just a place where you have a brass plate. So we're seeing lots of things, and I think I'd be echoing everything that my colleagues can see here on the island. But, of course, we also need to just give people the confidence for horizontal investment. You know, consumption cannot power the Cyprus economy unless it is temporary consumption. We need a significant increase in the temporary population, whether that be a business population or whether it be a tourist population or whether it be a convalescent medical population or an educational population. But we need people to come and use the resources of the country so we can do some, we can charge them. I mean, it's as simple as that. I think there are growth opportunities. We also need to try and stop Cyprus companies when they hit a certain size seeking a foreign buyer, and we have to try and support some Cyprus businesses getting bigger than their island so we can support them as they go abroad. And there have been examples in my time in Cyprus where I didn't get to the company in time before they sold themselves to a foreign buyer, and I think that we would have been happier to fund them to buy the foreign buyer. So there are things like that that I think will offer opportunities for the banking sector. But at the same time, I just say one last thing. If you look at our deposit base, and I can only speak for my own, I'm not going to speak for the sector, 30% of our deposits come from overseas, and the rest come from the residents on the island. That overseas deposits need to be careful, because actually the misdeployment of those in history caused much of the excess lending and asset price expansion on the island. So we do need to be careful about the use of liquidity. By the way, I don't want surplus liquidity. I want the right level of liquidity. We've taken our loan-to-deposit ratio down from 150% to just inside 90. I don't really want it to go a lot lower. I don't want to be sitting there with an unutilized surplus level of liquidity. I'd like the bank to be efficient, and I'd like it to be sitting levered against its capital in an appropriate way. Our bank is the most sort of per unit of risk capital intense bank in Europe with the lowest leverage. That works because we're in a sub-investment grade economy generating reasonable returns on that lending at a relatively low cost of funding. But actually, if we were to become an investment grade economy, we would suffer. So we need to figure out the right level of leverage, the right level of risk, and therefore the right level of return.
Thank you, Mr. Huelga. That's a very dynamic message that you are ready to support Cyprus corporations all the way, even in their international expansion. Mr. Kyriakou, what you have heard from the other three panelists, what are your comments on the Cyprus Bank's growth strategies?
Listen, I agree that the overall fundamentals are positive to sponsor further growth. I think that there's scope for further efficiency agenda focus in terms of becoming more efficient industry player and looking at our cost structures to unlock value. But overall, I agree with the rest of the speakers.
Thank you.
Yes, please. I may say the success of the turnaround of the economy and of the banking system, it is demonstrated by the fact that there is an amount of almost 10 billion of liquidity available in the system. So 3 years after the financial crisis, we do have this huge liquidity. And as it was mentioned before, people are saving. So we do see deposits, local deposits, increasing on a daily basis. So liquidity is there. The willingness of the banks to lend, good lending, it's there. We have a very well improved regulatory environment that ensures that good lending practices and good banking practices are adopted. But we do feel that the Cyprus economy does not only require financing, it requires equity as well. And if we get equity alongside financing by the banks, we do believe that this will have a multiplier effect in terms of the prospects of the economy.
Thank you. It is clear that the digital revolution in financial services is well underway globally, with increasing global investment in fintech. We have not seen this largely affect the Cypriot market yet, but it is a matter of time, I believe. Mr. Kyriakou, you are working for a bank that is one of the leaders in fintech. How do you see digital disruption in the Cyprus financial services market?
It's a global trend. I mean, if we see taxis going digital and hotels going digital, I think that the banking sector would not be an exception here. We expect, and I think this is what analysts say, that by 2018, 40% of banking will be digital. The Cypriot banks, much like all of us, will have to follow suit. They don't need to go into the investments that the large international banks are currently engaged into, but essentially to follow strategies in terms of how they can enhance client experience by adapting the digital technology and how they can improve their cost structures. I think efficiencies and client experience are the fundamental results of the digital proposition. We need to continue to improve the service because competition is coming in, especially at the retail section of the market, because of better services and cheaper services. So efficiency is critical to defend oneself against digital inroads. Cypriot banks do have digital strategies. They have been on the retail side launching a website and web banking. They have mobile applications, so they're pretty much in tune with developments. I mean, I think that much like all of us, they are in for a long trip to respond to the digital developments, which are very fast and unavoidable.
Thank you. Mr. Hourigan, will the role and relevance of today's banks be at risk, or are there any solid plans in place to create better, faster, and cheaper services through digitalization?
Yeah, look, I mean, banking today looks a little like physical music looked like before the invention of Apple and digital downloads. We have to be very careful that the thing we hate the most, which is regulation, is the thing which protects us the most. But actually what you're seeing across Europe and across the world right now is the introduction of things that start to break that mold. I mean, I think it's the 27th of February this year, the enablement of the Payment Services Directive 2 in Europe is a dangerous moment for banks, and we have to be ready for it. Last year, we lost significant across this panel revenues because of the introduction of the credit card directives across Europe. I mean, we had 11 million of reduction in our non-interest income because of the introduction of things that are supposed to create better cost visibility and efficiency for the customer. But all of these things cost money. So we cost money to put them in place, and then then there are regulations of various things coming in place which actually cut your revenues after you've put them in place. So PSD2 is quite interesting. It opens up the landscape that we have in our payments environment, and we have to be very, very careful about it. I think every bank in the world has a digital transformation program going on. We have a digital transformation program going on. These guys have a digital transformation program going on. It's not peculiar to Cyprus. What we have to make sure, though, is that in doing it, we don't just make it sexy at the front end, but we change the nature of straight-through processing. We take the steam-powered engines out of the back of the bank. You know, we make sure that we actually try and make something more efficient. And you know, the cost-income ratio that sits in our banks look great because we're sub-investment-grade revenue streams. Those sub-investment-grade revenue streams, if normalised, would make us a more expensive-looking banks, I think, across this panel. So there's more to do. Fintech is not something I'm afraid of. I think it's something we should embrace. I think fintech is just another way of trying to get a cheaper piece of servicing into your operating model. And I think that Cyprus is a little behind the curve in embracing it. We're behind the curve in embracing it as a bank, and I think we need to get ahead of that curve now that we can turn our attentions to more normal environments.
Thank you. Mr. Hadjiannis, has the co started to work on digitalization solutions?
Definitely we do. And we
anything disruptive at the moment?
We see this again as an opportunity. We don't believe that we need a digital strategy because this is the digitization. It is a process. It is a modus operandi. Mm. So this is not something that you do for a limited period of time. This is a fact. Either we get on top of this not only trend of this cycle, or we will face dire consequences. The banking industry is one of the industries that has not really moved ahead in terms of technology. It is one of the laggards in technology. We do believe that this is part of a continuous operational efficiency project and transformation for our bank, because we have been so traditional. This again is a disadvantage and advantage. Disadvantage because we have to start from really a very low starting point. At the same time, it gives us the opportunity to use latest technology. We do believe that it is easier to create a digital bank alongside the traditional bank, the legacy bank. We need to do this for operational efficiency, but also because we need to attract new clients. So this is our strategy. And in general, the Cyprus banking system has to move away from dealing only with NPLs and deal with real banking issues. Part of that, it is attracting and servicing the younger clients through the extensive use of technology and using digitization in general as a process in order to generate savings on the way it does operation on a daily basis.
Mr. Matsis?
Yes. Well, we have no option. We're finding ourselves, banks are finding themselves in competition from all over the place. Other than the deposit-taking function, which is still controlled by banks, by credit institutions, there is competition from every other industry in all the other products that we do. Loans, there's online lending platforms, not banks, online lending platforms. Payments, online payment system providers. FX, online FX. So there's a lot of competition. And all of that competition is giving the channel to the client through a very good technology. So we have no option. We have to change. We have to upgrade our technology, ensure that we can compete in all those sectors. We will always be relevant and will always be needed in a society because of our deposit-taking function, but then we need to compete in everything else. And you have Google, and you have Apple, and you have every online platform that is becoming a competitor of banks. We will get there. I agree with John that transformation has to be front to back. It makes no sense to just change your window without changing everything else in order to ensure that you increase your efficiencies as you do so. And as everybody said, that's what we are all currently looking at. We have to do it, and it's fun doing it. So that's our strategy as well.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes to take questions. If there are questions from the audience, we'll be happy to. If you can also state your name and the company that you represent.
I'm from Virginia Beach. I used to be retired from banking. I have too many regulations, so I started my own business in Virginia Beach. You mentioned, Mr. Hourigan, and I understand the NPL situation where, there are NPLs and there are NPLs. And you mentioned that in regard to Bank of Cyprus, most of them are collateralized loans instead of being unsecured loans, which some of them, some of the European banks have more unsecured loans relative to the Bank of Cyprus situation. So my question is, obviously the values securing those loans are important. And in terms of the real estate values in Cyprus, are they currently artificially high, artificially low, or just right? because that obviously impacts the allowance for loan losses that you need to have relative to the NPLs.
Thank you. If you can just stay to the question, please, because we don't have much time.
Sure.
So that's a question.
Sure. Well, look, I can give you the answer. We sold 80 assets last year, and we sold them at 104% of book. And across the land, the commercial and the residential assets, the values that we either had them on our books or foreclosed them was lower than the amount we were able to sell them at. So I think that's an important point. We also have a policy in our bank to take on assets at for sale values in the foreclosure regimes or in deals we do with customers, because we want to make sure that we've taken the pain up front. I think that's an important principle of how you basically can create momentum. And actually what I'm seeing so far in the first quarter is one, a pickup in momentum of the sales and an even larger gap between what we hold them at and what we're selling them at. So, and then if you look at the various indices, whether they're Central Bank or RICS index, the Institute of Chartered Surveyors, you'll see that actually they've stabilised and are starting to modestly rise. So I would say that there are pockets of Cyprus where property is rather expensive, and some of that's structural to do with naturalisation and various other things. But across the island, in the majority, there are different sort of pockets, but I think we're now seeing a stabilisation at the bottom of property prices across most sectors.
If I may add on this, even though we have a different portfolio, I fully support what John said. In our case, we are well within our loss budget calculations regarding the disposal of properties last year. Regarding this year, we do see very, very strong demand for in specific sectors of property. And actually, the demand is at prices that are comfortably higher than the book values than the book values. So there is strong demand for specific properties.
Actually, it's the same for us. Every type of real estate, apart from non-urban land, has shown much better much better performance than our forecasts of last year, over the course of last year. So from that perspective, it seems currently quite positive. Having said that, there is a big challenge. There is a big stock of NPLs. Everybody has very aggressive targets in realizing them. And a lot of that realization, if it's not restructuring, essentially is property ending up on the bank's balance sheet. So there is a big stock coming. So that's the challenge that we all face. But so far, the signs are good.
Thank you. We have an agreement. It is a good time to close the first session. Cyprus has managed a lot more than countries like Greece and Italy, and despite the fact it doesn't have the means available other countries they have available, it definitely punches well above its weight. Thank you.
Sure.